Hey, welcome to Red Eye. I'm TV's Andy Levy filling in for Greg Gutfeld. Greg, if you're watching, whatever was in that huge crate you had delivered to your office has stopped moving. Hope you can get your money back. Let's go to Daily Beast contributor Dana Vachon for our pregame report. Dana, what's coming up on tonight's show?
It's Wednesday, January 19th, 2011. People don't know how much longer they can take this crap. In Washington, an internal review concluded that the WikiLeaks scandal was not really that damaging. Asked by phone why the administration would frighten Americans by saying lives were at risk, a White House official told one reporter that he was calling him from inside the house. While in Tehran, authorities banned Valentine's Day, delighting chicks who'd be busted. And in Los Angeles, Octomom Nadia Suleiman has entered the dynamic world of latex whipping porn, crammed into a corset, her litter's toys arranged sorrowfully in the background. I'm a human being with real feelings and fears and wants, she said. Maybe ironically, maybe not. Andy?
Thanks, Dana. I'm glad to see that the latex whipping porn is a world. I like that.
No, it's not a world.
I know, right? Yeah. All right, let's welcome our guests. I'm here tonight with entertainment journalist and ultimate fighting champion Jill Dobson, the sadly mustache-free Nick Gillespie, Reason.tv and Reason.com's editor-in-chief. Bill Schultz, Freshman's Weekly Shower. And sitting right next to me is a first-time guest. He's Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters, Fox News strategic analyst. His latest book came out on Tuesday. It's called The Officer's Club. Buy it or you'll be put on some sort of watch list. And his readers are dwindling, but he's still good for kindling. It's our New York Times correspondent. Good to see you again, Pinch.
According to today's travel section, thanks to the troubled economy, there's plenty of deals in the island nation of Greece. Lord knows Andy Levy loves visiting Greece. Always goes there with a large group of his male friends. Andy?
Good place to pick up chicks, Bill.
Right.
I mean, Pinch.
Yo,
whatever.
Bill's not related to Pinch.
Whatever.
Yeah. Behind the curtain.
So should we freak over WikiLeaks, or can we manage the damage? Well, Reuters reports that U.S. officials are saying privately that the mass leak of diplomatic cables is actually no big whoop, their words, despite what the Obama administration says. According to a congressional official, the White House felt compelled to say the leak seriously hurt U.S. interests in order to get the site shut down and bring charges against Julian Assange and his associates. So basically, if you buy this, the leaks were embarrassing, and that's it. Meanwhile, WikiLeaks is planning to reveal the Swiss bank account details of hundreds of the rich and famous, exposing them as tax evaders. For more, we go live to our Zurich bureau chief, world's hungriest cat. WHC, what do we know about this former Swiss banker who blew the whistle? I will film you, but I won't feed you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really nice.
That's your mantra.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. That's how I make my money.
Yeah.
Hey, Ralph, I'm guessing you're not really buying that WikiLeaks hasn't hurt U.S. interests. And when I say I'm guessing, I mean I know.
Well, it's an effort at damage control on the part of whoever's saying this. Reuters has it wrong. Everyone, I stress, everyone I know who's inside the system, the worker bees, the people who have to deal with the damage and the damage control, really feel this is huge, and the ramifications can't even be measured yet. Now, it really looks, without the least exaggeration, so this is the biggest security compromise in our history since the 1940s when American communists gave atomic secrets to the Soviets. And it's big on two counts. First of all, as a former intelligence officer, I tell you, you can see things that a layperson might not when you read these documents, and then you put them all together. And the volume, the sheer volume, and quantity has a quality all its own.
Right.
And you can build a picture, especially of our military, as well as our diplomatic system, that's deeper and more detailed than the KGB ever had at the height of the Cold War. This is a huge intelligence bonus for our enemies as far as how we work. The other thing is, it has compromised, endangered the lives of the people who talk to us, who work with us, or for us, not only in Afghanistan, but around the world. Everybody from informants to human rights workers to government officials and say, well, we redacted the names. As an intelligence guy, you put the date and the place together, and it's not hard to figure out who it was.
But
people will die.
Who has died so far? Well, I guess for me, this is,
I'm the whipping boy. I'm the latex whipping boy.
Yes.
I'm Julian Assange's octomom here.
You let him crash at your place a lot.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Sure. It's odd, yeah, because when I wake up and, you know, he's rubbing up against me,
sure.
It's like, you know. But
sure.
He took too long to press charges on that one, by the way.
That bird has flown.
You'd be a good couple with his white hair, your black hair.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's like a cookie.
Nick, did you want to say something serious?
Let's get back to him having sex with Assange.
Not really. Can we watch the kitten again?
Sure.
I like the kitten.
Sure.
But first off, it's like the failure is not WikiLeaks. The failure is the U.S. intelligence community. And so I'm guessing that if we were so bad at keeping secrets that are important, then we're screwed anyway. So it's not, let's not talk about this as a WikiLeaks story. This is a failure of American intelligence. The other thing is that this is the new normal. So we got to get used to it. And I still think that certainly from a diplomatic point of view, and maybe not from a military and intelligence point of view, you know what, we are coming out looking pretty good because we're not big liars, cheaters, and hypocrites like every other country that we deal with.
That's true. And Assange did not achieve his aim of humiliating the United States because the cable showed, hey, this, you know, we pretty much
I think Rex Ryan's wife managed to do that.
Oh,
yeah, we live up to our ideals more often than not. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to kill little babies
fits,
in the third world.
If the shoe fits, fetishize it.
All right, I'm moving on from you.
Yeah,
right.
But anyway,
I get that a lot.
We'll see, but lives have been endangered. Our enemy's got a great gift of intelligence, and Julian Assange is a maggot.
Yeah, there's not too many people even who, are okay with WikiLeaks.
He's not the story. It's a separate issue. I prefer to think of Assange as a vinyl whipping.
Sure.
More than a maggot. I think that's more apropos.
Look, the guy is a molester, you know, the Swedish massage
Allegedly.
He is alleged molester.
He's an alleged molester, like Gerard Ferrer is an alleged gunman, right?
Yeah, but he wants to be the story.
Sure.
This guy is an egomaniac, and I think we'd agree on that, I hope.
Yeah. But the real egomaniac is Greg Gutfeld, whose name is still on the show, even though he's
talking behind his tiny back.
We're going to drop all of this later. I want to get Jill involved in this. Jill, WikiLeaks is, they're now apparently going to expose these celebs as tax cheats, whatever. First of all, what does this mean for Perez Hilton and TMZ? Are they out of business?
I think they'll do okay.
Right.
I think they'll do just fine. And I think it's also important that you brought me into this because we're getting a former intelligence officer, but unless you have an entertainment reporter weighing in on this, really what's the
point? It's called being fair and balanced.
Right.
And we need you in the intelligence world.
I'm going to take the opposite view. I like the old celebrity tax cheats.
I mean, like Ringo Starr and the Rolling Stones. I mean, they left England in order to be taxed.
As long as they admit it, they're like, we don't like your tax laws.
Yeah.
We're going to put our money
somewhere else.
Yeah. And I think the real issue here is that all these people that we think have 1,000 times more money than us, we're about to find out have 1,000,000 times more money than us. And that's just what we need to hear.
Do you have any speculation as to who these tax cheating celebs are? I'm assuming Betty White.
Definitely Betty White.
Yeah.
Cloris Leachman, I think. I think there's a whole generation.
What about the dad on?
Please, God, let it be Sean Penn.
That would be nice. What about also the dad on Growing Pains? There's always
Alan
been something
Thicke.
Off about
Alan
him.
Alan is a
well, you know,
is
he's got to be parking
guy.
The royalties.
Although he's Canadian.
No,
so
but he's
got
to be parking the royalties from writing the Family Ties
theme song. Right.
And Facts of Life.
Actually, you bring up a good point. He didn't go to Haiti to be a humanitarian. He went there to avoid taxes.
Sean Penn, you mean.
That's the real story right there. And to a lesser extent, Wycliffe. To a lesser extent, Wycliffe.
He's parking money in those zombie baseball stitching factories.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, the compromising big tax cheats and general jerks, that's a legitimate mission for WikiLeaks. If Assange was concentrating on that, I would probably send him money.
Mm-hmm.
Opposed to saying he should be assassinated.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you know, you pay your money, you take your choice.
No, absolutely. I just hope they leave Miss Lola Falana alone.
Yeah.
She suffered enough, I think.
Yeah.
Who the heck is Lola Falana?
Please. One of
what
the
is
most
wrong
multi-talented
with you? What is wrong with you?
She can do it all.
Even the sound guy just said,
just,
what is wrong with me in my
just
hair?
Disgusting. All right, I'm moving on. From Wiki to Icky. Has Iran said no way to our Hallmark holiday? The answer ain't nay. The most Persian-y of Middle Eastern countries has long enacted bans on anything seen as spreading American ideals, and Valentine's Day is the latest victim. V-Day has become increasingly popular with Iranian youth and a moneymaker for the country's economy, where 70% of the population is under 30 years of age. But now, hard line and probably hard up, authorities have banned the production of V-Day gifts and any promotion of the holiday, with a printing union warning its members, quote, honoring foreign celebrations is the spread of Western culture. Printing and producing any products related to Valentine's Day, including posters, brochures, advertising cards, boxes with symbols of hearts, half hearts, red roses, and any activities promoting this day are banned. Authorities will take legal action against those who ignore the ban. Angry Iranian lovers immediately hit the streets in protest. Yeah, actually, that was some rally in Turkey, but either way, it's foreigners being foreigners.
Okay, come on now. Where's a picture of the Persian cat?
That's a good. Yeah, we screwed that one up.
Where were you during our meeting? Right? Our meeting, just me and Andy.
Yeah. Hey, Ralph, so the Iranian government's attempting to ban something here that's really popular with young people. Is this a tactical error?
Yeah, it's dumb. But, you know, so what's new? Ahmadinejad does dumb things. But, you know, the Persians have a bigger problem than Valentine's Day. Islam's still a pretty thin coat, and the mullahs know that. It's Zoroastrian under all that stuff. And to be fair, as much as I hate to be fair to Ahmadinejad and company and Khamenei, look, in our own country, you have religious zealots want to ban Halloween.
Right.
Puritans in England ban Christmas as a pagan holiday. Zealots of any religion will always find witches to burn.
Yeah.
And cats.
That's true. Wow. Nick, I'm going to argue
that Zoroastrians, by the way, are obsessed with fire to begin with. So they're always looking for something to burn. Yeah.
I'm going to nod like I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, sure, I do.
I do know what you're
talking about. Nick, I'm going to check with Lola Falana on this one later. I'm going to argue here that Iran.
By the way, I would put Joey Heatherton as the other great triple threat.
Oh, they will leave. They will not touch Joey Heatherton.
She was in the cigar commercials. I do know her.
All right.
Didn't she used to advertise cigars? She had a little role, the Monterey.
Yeah, I'm going to get back to the story here. Nick, I'm going to get back to the story here. And I'm going to argue that Iran actually got something right with this ban because Valentine's Day is just stupid.
I agree with you.
Thank you, Nick. Thanks, Nick.
I know.
You are losing control of this panel.
No, you know what? I'm like Mr. America. I'm a ventriloquist. You haven't seen my lips move when Ralph or Jill are talking.
That's not where your hand is.
And I'm going to, well, you know, it's, that's
release.
I don't really, okay, sorry about that.
Yeah. Dobby, are you seriously the only woman in the world that hates Valentine's Day?
I haven't polled the rest of the women of the world, but I hate Valentine's Day. I always try to avoid it. And I try to do something different because it's just so cheesy. Sure. So this year, my sweetheart and I are going to burn down the cardboard box that Bill calls home. It's just a way to, like, you
that's
know.
Sweet.
Why?
Get the spark going, literally.
Just sure.
Are you
going to
make s'mores?
Minding my own.
Yeah.
Did nothing to nobody.
Bill, what do you make of this war on Valentine's Day?
Well, I like the excuse that I think it was the same printing union said, we have many other holidays that involve expressions of love and affection for friends and secrets.
Yeah, there's like the Satanic Verses holiday.
Exactly. Yeah. There's the holiday apologies to the goat you raped, give them bouquets of carrots
and perhaps a massage. That goat was in on it.
Yeah, well, the goat's asking for it all the time.
Whoa, that's not just Persian, let's be fair. That's throughout the entire Middle East.
Oh, okay, yeah. I don't want to just classify goat rape into one part.
We also mean the Mediterranean and...
You guys realize our Middle Eastern ratings are now plummeting.
Yeah.
I apologize to all of you.
Absolutely. Young people in Iran love this show. Which brings me to my last question on this topic, Ralph. With much of the Iranian population being under 30, 70% apparently, and they kind of dig Western culture, is it just a matter of time before Iran's government is doomed? But can we afford to wait that long?
Yeah, raging hormones versus raging fanaticism.
Right.
It is a matter of time.
Who do you bet in that?
What's the over-under?
I go with the hormones.
I take the hormones.
I go with the fanaticism.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, because the young folks might have love guns. Yeah. But the real guns are in the hands of the state. And the one lesson...
The one key lesson
that the mullahs took from the fall of the Shah was don't fold in the clinch. They're not going to leave the country. They're going to kill. Now, that said, in time, the regime will fall. The Shah, so to speak, always falls.
Right.
Yeah. But it's going to be pretty ugly in the meantime. And the neat thing about the Valentine's Day story is They've just driven it underground. And we know what happens when you drive something underground with young folks.
It becomes all the
rage. It disappears completely.
Yeah. It works.
And you just get A's on all your
I see you're a student of history.
Yeah.
All right. From chocolate hearts to swapping parts. Will the city of Berkeley pay for gender reassignments, a.k.a. the Bill Schultz? Well, the city council will soon decide whether to set aside taxpayer money for city workers to get sex change operations. The proposal, which members will vote on next month, would allow the California town to dole out 20 grand from its budget to cover the surgeries. Critics question why the government would set aside money for the ops when cash is needed for much more pressing stuff, like camera-mounted arrows. Well, 20 grand could buy a lot of those.
Yeah.
Probably should be arrow mounted cameras.
That's
not
Persia's Cupid?
No, we're done with that story. Okay, this is a different story now, Nick.
I don't like that.
Nick,
can does Iran have a St.
We're not talking about Iran anymore, Nick. Okay. Try to keep up.
Why don't you bring up the story?
Be fair. Sitting next to me confuses me.
I understand that now, yeah. So the city of Berkeley has up to $252 million in unfunded liabilities. You'd like to think there's no way they can pass this, but
there's always a way. Wait, they have $252 million worth of people who want to have sex changes?
No, they have $252 million in unfunded liabilities. Okay.
And Julian Assange wants to get a sex change.
Again, not part of this story,
in
Nick.
Berkeley?
You're going to start doing callbacks from stuff in 2009 at this point. I mean, come on.
Did I ever tell you about the time on Valentine's Day? It was Valentine's Day 1975. Me and Lola Falana.
All right, callbacks to people I don't know. He's going to do a callback to his mustache. That's what's going to happen.
Oh, boy. That was
Nick, this is all a cover for the fact that you did not prepare for tonight's show. Mm.
I have words on pages
here. Then why won't you speak them?
Yeah, no, I think that, let me put it this way, if Berkeley wants to spend its money, as long as I don't have to pay for it, more power to them.
But the taxpayers are going to have to pay for it if the city council votes
You know what, they should move.
So it's Berkeley, love it or leave it?
Yeah, exactly. No, Edward Hirschman, Albert Hirschman, the great economist, said, you know, you have exit, voice, and loyalty in a system. Mm-hmm. You either leave, you love them to death, or you bitch and moan about stuff.
Uh-huh.
Berkeley, you know, take one of those three, and then let's get on with the next story or the next kitten video.
It's funny, though. Yeah, that's funny you mentioned it, because bitch and moan about stuff with Greg Gutfeld was the original title of
the show.
Yeah, we last minute changed it to Red Eye.
Yep. Yeah.
Standards and practices.
Yeah. Still not sure we made the right call.
If Berkeley does pass this and funds sex change operations on the taxpayer's dime, my God, think of the cosmetic surgery possibilities in Hollywood. That'll bankrupt California even worse.
No,
that's a good point. Yeah.
I mean,
well, Jill, as a former attractive man, you probably support this proposal.
I do. I do very much so, yes. I gave myself my hormone shots before I
campaigned.
Yeah, I'm in big favor of this. What's interesting to me is in the proposal they say the money will be handed out on a first come first serve basis. Yeah. Is there really
no
that much demand?
We're talking about Berkeley.
Are there that many city employees, not just residents, city employees who are just desperate for sex change?
Apparently.
I figure there's probably one guy and he's just pushing this
guy
through.
Guy is, please don't call him a guy.
Soon to be not God.
Yeah, open your mind here, Blondie, because as a post man living within the body of a post woman for long these many years and wanting to change that, but not being able to on a post man slash woman salary,
please don't look
at me. Feel their pain.
Please,
I'd love to feel your
pain. Please don't look at me when you talk like this. It terrifies me.
All right.
It absolutely terrifies me.
It turns him on.
If he went to Iran with this attitude, you would feel their pain.
Yes, absolutely would. Well, that would be via death.
But
sorry, I thought you were talking about something erotic.
All right, we got to go to break here. When we return, what was Arnold addicted to while in office? Spoiler alert, it wasn't pixie sticks, or was it? Is the governator not ready to see you later? Former Golden State Gov and Oscar-winning director of the film Sybil, Arnold Schwarzenegger, tells an Austrian magazine that he was, quote, addicted to his power, and that his time in office probably cost him $200 million. Oh, and bonus, he's currently considering three different roles, my little Albibakers, including With Wings as Eagles, a World War II epic written by Braveheart and We Were Soldiers scribe Randall Wallace. So I know what you're thinking. What are Arnie's thoughts on Brazilian buttocks?
I knew I had something in common with the Brazilian man. I like that.
You know something? After watching the mulattoes shake it, I can absolutely understand why Brazil is totally devoted to my favorite body part.
I feel like Arnold is pro-Brazilian buttocks.
Was that?
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, I really feel like he was. Nick, you were saying in the green room that you felt really bad for Arnold, that being governor cost him all that money.
Oh, yeah. No, and also, you know, this is a guy who had Kurt Waldheim at his wedding.
Right.
So I think I'm very much looking forward to his interesting epic on World War II.
Mm.
I think it's going to be effective we haven't seen since about 1942.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Quite a review, actually.
Yeah, actually.
Lenny Riefenstahl directly.
That's right, yeah.
Actually, the story is about...
Lenny Riefenstahl, your life is
the called. The story is based on a true story, and it's about a Nazi who refused to go along.
Crying on the inside?
No, it's a true story. He let POWs go towards the end of the war.
Uh-huh. Oh, gee, that was nice. What? Toward the end of the war?
There's various degrees
just
of Nazi,
after, I don't know, like Normandy or something like that. It's like, maybe I'm starting to understand that.
Well, also, a lot of POWs were blonde.
I'm sick
so he's
of
like,
this,
all right, why not?
This damn war.
Hey, Ralph, remember all that talk about amending the Constitution so Arnold could be president?
Yeah.
Remember, where's that all gone?
Well, it went back to the Austrian right-wing parties back then, man. I have to say, you know, the idea of movies, we don't need movies about good Nazis. There were no good Nazis.
Did you Nazi Valkyrie?
Tom Cruise is a Nazi?
Sure.
Look, those guys, the guys who rebelled against Hitler, didn't do it until they were losing.
Right.
These Prussian noblemen.
And even then, they screwed it up.
Then they just did it crappily.
The Red Army was at the gates of their estates in
Prussia. Totally.
And suddenly, they were all good Democrats who missed the Weimar Republic.
Bring on
Cabaret first.
Right. Don't you think Schwartzy should definitely do a remake of The Sound of Music? He would be great as Captain Von Trapp.
I really don't think he would.
No. And be one of the children.
But I do want to ask. I want to ask Jill here. Is there still an audience for Arnold as a movie star? Is he kind of a dinosaur at this point?
I think there is. There's all this internet buzz about Arnold's reading scripts again, you guys, and all these fanboys writing these blogs with thousands of exclamation points. So it sounds like there's a market. You want to go?
By the way, I like how Jill illustrates the buzz on the internet by doing this with her finger.
Oh, absolutely.
I feel like I'm there in the blogging world.
I knew what she meant. Did you not know what she meant?
You know, I saw a workshop in that in the green room.
Absolutely,
it's better live.
And when I talked about burning down Bill's lighter.
And then acting as if I'm still inside it while you're burning it.
But The Sound of Music is one of the saddest movie, darkest movies I've ever seen. No matter how many times you watch
the hills are
they
alive.
Never catch the kids. And I always root, if I watch it one more time, I'll catch the damn kids. But it never happens.
You know what? My parents never let me see the end of it, and now I know why.
No one did.
Yeah. Next, you're going to tell me Old Yeller dies. So, do you have a comment on the show? Email us. It's redeye@foxnews.com. And to leave a voicemail on Greg's direct line, call 212-462-5050. Still to come, the halftime report from Dana Vachon.
Tonight's halftime report is sponsored by wolverines, those solitary, burrowing, carnivorous mammals of northern forest regions who are closely related to the weasel. Thanks, wolverines.
Welcome back. Let's find out if we've gotten anything wrong. For that, we go to Dana Vachon, who just went like this.
I feel like I'm on the military channel tonight, Andy.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I feel like it's 3 a.m. and we just watched something on El Alamein.
Cool.
Ralph, you seem to have no mercy for even the musical Von Trapp children and said that you hoped that they would be caught in their tracks. So I've got a two-part question for you.
They never get caught, though.
Which quote from scripture best applies to Dresden and Hamburg's over bombings? Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do, or they have sown the wind and they shall reap the whirlwind. And part two, John J. McCloy, villain or misunderstood guy?
Everybody's misunderstood in 21st century America, so that one's easy. I actually had distant relatives killed in the firebombing of Dresden. And
way to go, Dana.
And they deserve it. I have zero sympathy with the Nazi regimes. They were all good Germans until the things started going wrong. And then suddenly there were a few good Germans. And by 1945, when the GIs showed up, they were all good Germans. So the wind reaped the whirlwind.
Wow. I would just like to point out that Ralph Peters went on record as saying he has no sympathy for Nazis.
Wow.
Yeah,
we are going to get letters.
Yeah, isn't this supposed to be a new tone?
I'm not sufficiently sensitive. That's my problem.
Clearly not.
But Bill Schultz and Jill, you guys seem as sort of left out during the first half of the show as you are in this Dresden Hamburg discussion. I'm wondering, what did you guys find more challenging, Ralph's curmudgeonliness or Nick's dark quiet?
I'll let this one handle it. She always takes everything I give her.
So I'm super excited that Bill took his weekly shower today. And I agree with you, Dana, that it does feel like it's 3 a.m. around here. And I was confused by the intelligence and all the big words used on tonight's show.
Jill, I'll second that, Matt. I don't even know what curmudgeonly means. Ready for an espresso?
Jill, would it be possible to conclude anything positive about America from a successful Arnold Schwarzenegger World War II vehicle, in your opinion?
Anything positive about America?
Would that bring us anything but embarrassment? That we had just been duped again? Would it be like Lehman Redux?
We know how to entertain.
We know how to entertain?
Don't we make the best movies?
I'll second that emotion. Way to go, honey.
Nick Gillespie.
Yes.
On the topic of darkness general and American, I heard you say once that The Great Gatsby was actually F. Scott Fitzgerald's meditation on how the country had gone wrong, perhaps even from the start.
Yes.
Has there ever been an American golden age?
I think it's not yet born, and I'm looking forward to actually Arnold Schwarzenegger playing Kaiser Wilhelm, where at the end he utters the great word Verdun, which is, of course, what Kaiser Wilhelm said when he realized the Germans had lost World War I.
Is it possible to disavow God using his own name?
I'm sorry, were you saying something?
I'm wondering also, as a follow-up to that, is it possible that nostalgia is some sort of a meta historical engine that pulls man through the horrors of his experience?
There's a reason why Sha Na Na was one of the headline bands at Woodstock, and it was because nostalgia is, in fact, a high colonic of popular culture, Dana.
Can we have a two-shot of Ralph and Nick?
I don't think we can.
I like this.
Can we have more cats, please?
Ralph, you called Islam a pretty thin coat in your earlier discussions, and you said that the zealots of all religions always find witches to burn. But don't you think that when we look at the Islamic revolution and indeed Islamic fundamentalism, we find that there's a greater debt owed to Sartre than Muhammad?
I was going to ask that.
When I look at the Iranian revolution, those kids who were out protesting thought they could control the Muslim fanatics just the way Germans in the 20s and the early 30s thought they could control Nazi fanatics. I just don't like fanaticism of any stripe. And, you know, I wish I could make a funny joke about it.
The Philly fanatic? Do you like the Philly fanatic?
Man, I don't like any fanatics.
I do.
Except...
Even if it's spelled with a P?
Yeah, to that end, I don't know if you've ever seen Swing Kids.
Yeah, no, I was going to say.
Thank you.
You know what? The Swing Kids were one dance number away from bringing down the third one.
I agree. Look no further than Robert Sean Leonard's, unfortunately, unawarded performance.
Also, one could make the case that Kevin Bacon's character in Footloose was a fanatic.
Everyone makes that case. That is not an original idea.
He did have to dance.
I just thought of it now.
He just had to dance.
The American golden age is yet to come. I think we've found that much tonight. That's exciting.
Don't condescend us.
So your job is done?
I believe it is.
Excellent. Thank you, Dana.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Now, is he going to go get a haircut?
No. We're going to move on to another story.
Okay. Gets it actually more feathered.
Yeah. Okay. So is the big game a dud without a whole lot of bud? Is the on-field action just filler for a buckets full of Miller? Something, something sports related? Something, something, insert rhyming beer brand here? Researchers from the University of Minnesota, a Canadian territory, say that 8% of adult fans were legally drunk after attending pro baseball and football games. 362 adults agreed to breathalyzers upon departing two unnamed stadiums, and 40% of the fans were found to have enjoyed something fermented, while 1 in 12 tailgaters were full-on loaded. Let's take a look at a tape of a Bears fan arrested for public drunkenness after last weekend's playoff win against the Seahawks. I gotta say, I'm impressed he was able to smuggle that into the police station.
Yeah, Chicago cops are usually better than
clever
that.
Bears, yeah. Clever bears, clever bears.
You know, how you know the war on drugs is doomed.
It's over,
if you've got beer in prison.
No. Thank you.
I can't believe PETA never gets after you guys.
Oh, they do. Yeah, they hate us.
Here's a trick, ignore them.
Yeah. Seems to work.
They don't really have much backup.
Or pose nude for them.
Or that, yeah.
You first.
Back of the line, baby.
Hey, Jill, I find it hard to believe that only 8% of sports fans were legally drunk.
Yeah.
That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and I find it hard to believe that a study of this caliber was done, of this type was done. This makes no sense. Why would you do a study to see if people who attend sporting events drink and feel the effects of alcohol?
I think because you get to attend sporting events.
Is that the
when
reason?
You do the study. That's my guess.
Yeah. Because you got a government.
They're also doing studies to see
just to talk about the golden age of America, I believe it was when the Mets used Schaefer beer.
It's the one beer to have when you're having more than one.
Yeah, I mean, this is not... all we're doing here is dotting the I's.
Well, let me ask you this, Nick. Tailgaters were, what they said, 12 or 14 times more likely to be blotto than non-tailgaters, which can only mean one thing. The government needs to ban tailgating, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? The NCAA actually has banned it at Division I sports. And if you go to the Ohio State tailgates, it's a dry, you know, prohibition is in town.
What's the point of that?
I don't know. And maybe that's why they can't win the big game. And I've also been to Notre Dame where they drink heavily and they suck. So.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's my point. Yeah. Exactly. Like, why start at Division I? If you're going to do it, do Division III. Because that's the only way to get through a game is to be loaded.
That's true.
Why are you looking at me?
Because that's just an awful thing to say to Division III schools.
Yeah. Don't say
Division III schools. Yeah. We've offended Nazis and Division III schools.
Exactly. Ralph, have you ever been to a sporting event and not had a drink?
Yes.
Okay.
But it was the late 60s. Alcohol wasn't the choice.
What did you have?
You're the coolest girl ever. Yeah.
I guess when you're rolling, you don't need to drink.
Where's your monocle?
And I sit here and listen to you guys, and I'm thinking, no, in my day they were called flashbacks. I'm sorry for anybody who missed the late 60s. I mean, the 70s sucked so bad.
Well, no, they
but the
didn't.
Late 60s were really, really, really good.
But the 80s, but
the
80s were pleasantly powdery.
See, the difference is nose skiers just were having fun. In the late 60s, people thought they were doing it for a cause.
Oh, right, they were serious about it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the cause was not remembering the 60s.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
No. The 60s were a golden age. They got everything wrong. Every single thing we got wrong.
What? Take
but
that hippie crap back.
I like that.
Colonel.
Hey, Bill, you're a Chicago sports fan, which is code for drunk.
I knew that guy that was in that video.
Would there even be a Chicago sports scene if people couldn't get drunk at games?
How dare you? We're very knowledgeable with or without our old style.
Okay.
But we loves our old style. Mm. But here's the thing. You need booze for a variety of reasons. Namely, I'm a road guy visiting home teams since 1999 in this city. And so I needed to get drunk to endure the earlier Bears game this year in the Meadowlands.
That was a fun game,
actually. Where they got dismantled by the Giants. Yeah. That's your opinion. Now, did the numbness help me with the game? Maybe. Did it help me afterwards when I got my ass kicked by everyone at Section 10?
Right.
Totally.
You didn't feel a thing, did you?
I did not feel a thing.
Next I remember morning. You coming in the next day and just being like, hey, guys, and we were like, dude, where's your leg?
Thank you. My face was hamburger meat, but I felt fine.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So.
Thank you, Schlitz.
So pro-drinking.
Pro-drinking. I know it's a shocking stance.
As an undergrad, I went to Penn State before they threw me out.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. But at Penn State, people at sporting events got drunk to... tune out the other drunks. I mean, it was just, the drinking culture was massive.
Yeah.
Oh, so we should do that at movie theater.
Ying. That's actually a good idea.
Yeah. Ying.
Ying. Ying. Oh,
America's I got to move on. I got to move on, guys.
Latrobe, I'm thinking
about. I still have to move on. Coming up, why does the Octomom got it going on? Actually, she doesn't at all. It's a trick question, jerks. Bill, put your BlackBerry away.
Thank you.
Has the Octomom gone Octonuts or Octa-awesome? TMZ.com has obtained photos from a fetish shoot starring Nadia Suleiman, and they are as disgusting as they are delightful. The pics show a corset-wearing Suleiman whipping a grown man dressed as a baby, feeding him a bottle, and playing with her kid's toys inside her California home.
As one does.
That would be the same home she shares with her 14 children, Bill.
Yes.
Yeah. By the way, the man in the pics is Tattoo, an L.A. radio personality, for all two of you who give a Apparently, the shoot was for a video being shot for sale, which is probably pointless considering we'll just find it on the internet for free.
Yes.
Anyway, let's discuss this in our lightning round, a.k.a.
stories we sort of like, but not enough to include earlier in the show, but still wanted to talk about, so let's really quickly do them now.
All right, so Jill, she's got 14 mouths to feed.
Mm-hmm.
Mom's got to make some money, right?
Well, yeah, but she turned down all these offers to pose for a classy publication like Playboy.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right.
To do this? And P.S., I fully thought when I heard about these pictures that the guy in the baby bonnet would be Bill Schultz.
Oh, I know, right?
Truly believed it.
Yeah. Are you implying that those pictures are not classy? Shame on you. Shame on you for judging.
I'm sorry.
Shame on you for judging.
They are arch giants.
I apologize.
Although, Nick, to that point, if you're going to do porn, should you be doing obscure stuff like this?
I just want to point out that my nom de porn is Tattoo, and that those are pull-ups. Uh-huh. They're big boy pants. They're not
diapers. Okay.
And the heels are...
I like that term.
That's why I had to shave the mustache.
Yeah. Look at that video, and man, the Velvet Underground are never going to sound the same.
Are you surprised she still has custody of her kids?
I'm surprised she is, period.
This is
the California story.
Yeah. I think this is proof, that Octomom is not only stranger than we have imagined, she's stranger than we can imagine.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Right.
I don't know. I'm trying to be like Dana Vachon.
Sure. Bill, are you even shocked by this? This is like Tuesday for you.
What I'm shocked by is your awful, awful, close-minded response to this. Yeah. Am I the only one that's not ridiculously turned on right now?
Sure. No.
If they threw in a little bit of her birth tape, mwah, finished.
If she had any class, it'd be leather, not latex.
Thank you. All right, that I will agree with.
Latex is easier to wash.
Yeah.
I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, look.
From me, when we were talking about
polyester is easier to wash than silk.
Exactly.
You know,
don't get me started on silk.
Okay.
Latex is for love.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. And for lovers.
Leather is for love.
Yeah.
Jill, you're not contributing.
All right, next topic. Jill's going to contribute on this one.
She's crying.
Warner Brothers has announced that Anne Hathaway will play Catwoman in the next Batman movie, The Dark Knight Rises. Yeah. Other actresses up for the role were Keira Knightley, Jessica Biel, and Wilford Brimley. Who knew? Bill, I'm going to actually go to you first because you are a mildly huge Batman fan. We had Katie Holmes in the first Nolan Batman film.
Yes.
And then, of course, Maggie Gyllenhaal as Alfred in the second one. Now we've got Anne Hathaway. Is this a huge upgrade?
I'll tell you, Dark Knight is rising big time. You know what I'm saying? I'm a huge Anne Hathaway fan.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with the move of bringing Catwoman into this.
Uh-huh.
We've got, what's his name? That's playing Bane.
Bane. Yeah.
Low rent bad guy that first appeared in the 80s.
Thomas Hardy.
Look, as we've said many times in the office, Nolan we trust.
Right.
He can do no wrong. He has done no wrong so far. But there's two things that worry me about this. The selection of villains and the possibility of more to
come. More villains,
And what happens every time you have too many villains,
whether it's
Spider-Man or the first round of Batman,
goes down the flusher. Sound of Music,
too many Von Trapps.
I want to get Jill in here. Hathaway is co-hosting the Oscars next month. They've got to be psyched about this, right?
Yeah.
Definitely. And she's an amazing talent. The Oscars people know that she can sing, she can dance, drama, comedy, and I say action. I think she's
really
so.
You're all for this.
I'm all for it. I love Anne Hathaway.
She has all the magnetism of Julian Assange.
If only she were
Sean. He would be.
Have you seen The Princess Diaries?
She will be Kitten Woman. Michelle Pfeiffer was Catwoman.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow.
But an asexual Catwoman. There was no chemistry between her and that wasn't her fault.
I think Julie.
That's because Michael Keaton is gay.
Yeah.
We'll have to fix that in gay editing.
Well, are they going to bring back Egghead?
No, they're not going to bring back Egghead.
Was Egghead a character?
Or even Egghead.
On the TV show, and he's going to bring massive in Obama's America. Yeah, it was Vincent Price with a big head, and he's going to bring high cholesterol levels to Obama's Washington.
Right.
So come on, it writes itself.
Yeah, and they had Salt Shaker.
Yeah.
Also,
whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
Yep. Were you surprised as I was that Betty White did not get this role?
Yeah. No. She, you know, and I'm also, and she got nudged out of the Octomom video, too.
Yeah.
She's losing, yeah.
The backlash has started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
Thank
so,
God,
yeah.
I say. Yeah. All right, time to take a break. When we return, more nonsense to feed your nonsense loving brains. You're watching Red Eye on FNC, so stick around. Hey, it's a bonus story. Turns out George Lucas, shut up, Nick, seriously believes the world will end in 2012. That's according to Seth Rogen, who says that in a meeting with Lucas and Steven Spielberg, the Star Wars creator wouldn't shut up about the end of the world next year. Jill, are you buying this?
I think George planted this story in the media to still trying to draw attention away from Jar Jar Binks. It's too embarrassing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Bill, if Lucas really believes this, why is he planning on re-releasing all the Star Wars movies in 3D?
Is he? We don't know what goes on behind the mind of Lucas or his beard. But I will say this, something will happen in 2012, and it'll be bad, but it won't be the apocalypse, because George Lucas screws up prophecies like he does movie franchises.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Count it!
Harsh.
Count it, Lucas.
Nick, you think Lucas has a spaceship somewhere headed hidden away in Skywalker Ranch? Is he going to escape?
All I know is I was looking at that picture of George Lucas, and he really looks more and more like an Ewok with
he
it.
Does.
He does. Yeah. Yeah. He absolutely does.
Yeah. All he needs is the little,
Maybe he is good at prophecies.
I don't know.
He created the character.
I had a bunch. Right. Yeah. I had like 15 minutes of Jar Jar Binks material, which was stolen. Just like the way that the Emperor Palpatine stole the legislative move in the Intergalactic Senate from Jar Jar.
Yes.
I was going to talk about Palpatine.
Yeah.
It was also very
you
strange.
Had a chance.
It was strange that in the future, Jar Jar was still wearing denim vests.
Denim vests aren't coming back.
I don't think so.
I don't think so,
Colonel. Sorry.
I gotta tell you, if you look at how flat the characters are in all of Lucas's movies, Jar Jar Binks was progress. That was at least two-dimensional.
Yeah, that's very good point.
Howard the Duck was, let's not
that was a fantastic
never forget.
Movie.
Never
oh,
forget.
Fantastic
yeah.
movie.
Oh, HTD?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
loved it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Where's the sequel?
Right. All right. We'll close things out with a post-game wrap-up from Dana Vachon. And to see clips of recent shows, go to foxnews.com/redeye. Time to go back to Dana Vachon for the post-game wrap-up.
Mr. Levi Strauss, how are you?
Pretty good.
We're going to start with Ralph. Ralph, your new novel's out, The Officers Club. And in it, the post-Vietnam Army comes off as raunchy, like lurid, like something from one of the wildest dreams of Chi-Chi LaRue. Are you writing from personal experience?
Well, if you were in the post-Vietnam Army, it was really the Wild West. In the novel, The Officers Club, to be honest, I actually had to tone down the sex a little bit to keep it believable.
Wow.
By the mid-1980s in the Reagan era, different, much better Army, different world. But in late 70s, right into the early 80s, it was ugly, but it makes a great read.
I heard that the Duble was actually developed by the Pentagon as a modern boomerang.
That's classified.
Nick Gillespie, you're involved in next week's National School Choice Week activities. Is dropping out of
That's
school...
That's right. They're lifting the restraining order for the entire week.
Is dropping out of school the ultimate form of choice?
I like to think that it's a choice, not a child. And what National School Choice... Go to Reason.com and you'll learn all about the amazing proliferation of
Fantastic.
School choice opportunities.
We got to go. So it's back to you, Andy Levy.